Welcome to another episode of the Peak Performance Selling Podcast, where we interview top sellers and sales leaders to learn the different tips, tricks, and mental strategies that they use to create sustainable peak performance. Let's get rolling. Welcome to this week's episode of the Peak Performance Selling Podcast. Super exciting guest that I've got a chance to learn from, connect with on LinkedIn, and even over Zoom. As a longtime seller, Salman Mohiuddin has been in sales for 15 years, all in tech sales. You might have heard a few of the companies that he's worked for, a little company called IBM, Salesforce, and recently, in the last little bit less than a year ago, he joined Asana. And he's grown his career. It took him a little while, and we'll talk about this as we go, but he's grown his career into selling big enterprise deals as a strategic AE. And he also has a bit of a unique background than I've had with many other sellers that I've interacted with in my career or even folks on the podcast. And so I love bringing new thoughts, new ideas to the table. So Salman, welcome, and we're excited to have you.
Thank you, Jordan. Really a pleasure to join you today and look forward to chatting.
I've been really looking forward to this ever since I started following you on LinkedIn and got a chance to connect with you, and just keep seeing you dropping like incredible nuggets of wisdom. And even as we were talking before, I saw some folks recently come back with, whoa, I used some of the tactics that you've told me about and they work. It's crazy. And so I think there's some really good stuff that we'll unpack here. And where I love to start with guests is really understanding, you know, throughout your life, what is something that you learned that really impacted how you sell and how you show up as a seller?
It's actually a specific situation that happened earlier in my career. And it's something that a lot of sellers don't like to bring up because it's kind of taints their experience and resume. But I've wrote about this on LinkedIn, Jordan, a while back, a few times. And I'm not shy about talking about it. And if if future employers want to look at it and say, wow, he talked about that, that's okay. So I was actually put on a PIP. And if you're not in sales and you don't know what a PIP is, it's a performance improvement plan, where if you don't perform over a certain portion of time in your sales role, management will coach you and put you on a PIP. That allows you to, that puts certain targets in place that you have to hit. And I was put on a PIP early in my career. And it was really a shot in the arm for me because I slowly took a step back and I realized, first of all, number one, why am I put on this PIP? And I realized I wasn't performing at the level that I desired to. And this even happened before. I was a pretty good seller. Like, I was hitting my targets, and then I hit a roadblock in my career with this PIP. And if you're in sales, you know sales has a lot of highs and it has a lot of lows. And when I got hit with a PIP, I took a step back and realized, okay, what am I doing wrong? Number two, what do I need to do to be a better seller? And it came to a point where I even questioned myself, is sales even right for me in my career moving forward? But what I did is that, number one, my faith teaches me to be patient. You know, first of all, number one, be grateful for that you have a job and you're able to perform, because there's other people that would love to be in sales roles and they're not able to. Number two is be patient, that I've learned that with every difficulty comes ease. You're going to go through highs, you're going to go through lows, but you need to be patient. And number three, you need to be resilient as well. Don't keep your head down and mope, but be proactive and do what you need to do better. And what I did on that third point, Jordan, was I started building out a playbook, a sales playbook, based on my experience, based on the foundation, because I knew I was a great seller. Like, I didn't hit those numbers in previous years by accident, but sometimes you're going to hit that roadblock. And in years to come, I've actually built out a playbook all the way from prospecting strategically, uncovering new logos and existing accounts, and all the way to closing a deal and everything in between and what you need to do to be successful. And that PIP really put things into perspective and made me a better seller like I am today.
Oh, I just love the fact that these situations that when you're in them probably sucked quite a bit. You're like, oh my gosh, this is not how I view myself, not where I want to be. But they bring such incredible transformation and opportunity to reflect and to look at things a little bit differently. And we talked a little bit, and I've seen you post on LinkedIn talking about your faith and your practice. And you were mentioning how, you know, part of Islam is this focus on how do you pray five times a day, right?
Yeah.
Like, how long is that time for the prayer typically?
Oh, anywhere from 5 to 7 minutes.
Okay.
Maybe 10 minutes for some. Yeah.
Okay. And so you talked a little bit about some of the benefits you get from having this practice of every day, taking a few minutes out of your day to spend time and reflect, you mentioned a little bit. Can you just help? I don't know many people that are of Islamic faith. And so can you help me understand a little bit of the practice, the ritual, maybe a little bit around like the food you consume as well. And then we can kind of unpack how teams can be a little bit more aware of how they can support different candidates, different people on their teams as well.
Happy to share those thoughts for sure. And, praying is a foundation for my family and I. And I speak to a lot of folks that have different ways to really get through the day. Some people go to do meditation. Some people do yoga. Others just kind of go for a nice walk by themselves, removing all distractions. And it's just them and the nature around them. For me, it's praying. And I actually wrote about this, back in mid-March on a post of how praying helps me get through the day, because we're in sales. It's a sales-driven culture. We're constantly in meetings and Zoom calls and ins and outs. One hour, we're going to close a deal. The next hour, we're going to lose a deal. And it's a roller coaster of emotions. But for me, praying is a way to show gratitude for what I have today and reflect on what's more important in life. Is it closing the big deals, or is it building a foundation of gratitude and strengthening family bonds? I have a beautiful wife and three girls, and family and faith are pillars for me that really get me through what I need to do. So, praying five times a day is important. For example, before the kids wake up for school, I get up for the morning prayer. And the morning prayer really sets the foundation for the day in terms of, I ask for, I pray so that the day is made easy for me, right? Help me get through this day. What do I need to do? What are some of the tasks I need to accomplish? And I pray that the day is made easy for me as that foundation before the sun comes up. We have an afternoon prayer, for example. There's a midday and afternoon prayer. So maybe after a tough Zoom call, and I remove all those distractions away from me. And I set aside 5 minutes to pray, to show gratitude, to reflect on the day that passed, and asking for help in any time I need help. Maybe it's a deal. Where there's a sunset prayer. So when the sun sets, the day is coming to an end, reflecting on how that day went. What could I have done better? Showing gratitude and reflecting and being thankful for all the things and giving back to the community. And then the night prayer before I retire for bed, reflecting on the day that passed and really showing gratitude and reflecting on all those things. So praying removes those distractions. And it's a great way for me, for first and foremost, to remove any stress or anxiety. A lot of people look at other ways to reduce stress and anxiety. Praying allows me to reflect, remove distractions, reduce stress and anxiety, and focus on what matters most. And on your second point around, in the workplace, how that's, attracted me, and, some of the food restrictions as well. I've been grateful to have many leaders and companies that have been accommodating so that they've set aside a room that I can pray in when I need to. And it only takes 5 or 10 minutes. From a restriction standpoint, I eat halal meat. I still eat meat, but it has to be halal. The animal has to be slaughtered in a certain way. And I don't drink alcohol as well. So I'm very thankful for the leaders and coworkers I've had in the past and even currently that are very accommodating. So for example, at holiday time, a lot of people might receive a bottle of wine while I might receive a gift basket. Or, you know, managers have been extremely accommodating, considerate. They run a menu by me saying, hey, are there some items here that you're okay with? And it just means so much. And they don't have to do it. They really don't have to do it, Jordan, but either kindness of their heart, they have. It makes me feel a lot more comfortable.
Wow. This is really helpful for me to learn. And I'm sure a lot of our guests and listeners, as we think about how do we understand the perspective that other people come to the table with? How do we make sure that we start to build some awareness? Because, you know, I grew up around a predominantly white culture. The religious variation wasn't, I was kind of weird as a Jewish kid, even though I didn't really practice. Like I, you know, studied for my bar mitzvah in a church because there wasn't a synagogue near me. And so it was very homogenous there. And sales has been pretty similar, you know, and so I think it's really impactful to hear and learn different experiences. And we're going to double tap into the no drinking piece in a second, but I also just love hearing this built-in time for reflection each day, because I believe that our most impactful learning and where we grow the most is when we actually reflect. And so do you like have blocked time on your calendar to say, okay, here's, you know, when I have the time to pray, or is it something that is a little fluid for you in the day?
I have some block time. So usually I'll have, you know, if I have a couple of back-to-backs, I'll have a half an hour time slot where I can reflect. Now it doesn't take a half an hour. It probably takes 10 minutes to make that time. But, you know, working remotely for the last couple of years in my basement, it's made it a lot more easier to kind of be flexible and setting aside time to pray. And that's important to me, right? But even at the office, I remember working for large companies like IBM and Salesforce. They had prayer rooms available. They even had specific rooms to, prepare for your prayer. There's something called ablution, where you have to, you know, wash yourself and your face and your arms a little bit before you start praying. So you clean, and they prepared rooms for that and provided a place to pray, which I'm extremely thankful for, because the bottom line is that, you know, as an individual, you want to feel welcome. You want to feel comfortable where you work, and so appreciative that companies go out of their way to provide that flexibility. So.
Yeah, that's cool. And this thought around ritual, especially around the prayer, around how do you prepare for the prayer? I'm just curious, do you see that translate into how you sell or how you approach selling at all and building rituals?
It does. So one of the foundations of my faith is to show gratitude and be patient in times of difficulty. And I approach that maybe a bit differently from other folks, because, you know, I know that sales is full of highs and lows, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to have good months. You're going to have bad months. You're going to have great years. You're going to have bad years. But it's, how do you react? How do you deal with those times that are tough? Do you mope around and put your head down, or are you patient and resilient? One thing that my faith teaches me is that after every difficulty will come ease. With every difficulty comes ease, meaning that you're going to go through some tough times, like guaranteed, no matter who you are. You've been through it, I've been through it, I'm sure, in our life, but there's going to be light at the end of the tunnel. Are you patient? Are you resilient? Do you learn from what you've done and push forward and keep your head up? Or do you mope around and complain about, you know, why is this happening to me? And I've learned that there's a lesson in everything. And you learn from your failures, and you move towards your successes. And I found that, you know, if I lose a deal, if I put 100% effort and conviction in what I do, and I've worked hard, and I've done everything in my power, and if I lose a deal, I can live with that.
That's powerful. I think there is so much behind resilience, patience. It's a funny word, hearing patience in a sales context, because so much of what I think about is urgency, urgency, urgency. How do we build urgency? How do we uncover pain? How do we accelerate a deal? Time kills deals. But being able to have this, I don't know, the word that comes to mind for me right now is grace as you work with a deal. And it's not trying to force it. It's not trying to, you know, slam it in, as we like to say in the sales realm a lot. But it's how do we be patient and persistent and resilient and know that not everything's going to go perfectly, and we can learn, we can grow from all these experiences. It is really, really cool.
And I want to share one example with you, like not just from a deal perspective, but a career perspective. And, you know, I think in a world where we want instant gratification, you know, if you're an SDR, we want to get promoted to AE. You want to get promoted to management. You want to work on the biggest accounts as soon as possible. I started off as an SDR in August of 2006 at IBM, right? We're talking about 15 and a half years ago. And I got promoted to AE within a year. But my goal was I wanted to cover the big banks in Canada. I wanted to cover the biggest strategic accounts. I wanted to close those big deals. It took time. My first true enterprise sales role, where I was covering the biggest banks, came in 2017. It took me 10 and a half years to get to enterprise sales. I went through a multitude of AE roles in small and medium business and commercial, in mid-commercial, and then ultimately got to the banks. But it took me 10 years. So you need to have that patience, because not everything's going to be handed to you in a silver platter. You're going to go through ups, you're going to go through downs. But it's that journey that where you need to be patient and resilient to get there.
I wonder for you, what do you think it took to take that leap to, you know, the mid-market companies towards these bigger commercial corporate enterprises?
I believe it takes working on your craft, because I can tell you the sales cycle and how you approach a sales cycle from a commercial and mid-market perspective to an enterprise perspective, it's different, right? Hmm. When you work with companies that are 500, you know, maybe 1,000 employees, you know, there's some key decision makers you're going to be working with. But when it comes to working with large enterprise accounts, you're working with multiple executives, multiple departments, you're multi-threading, you're working on legal and MSA terms that could take several months, even more than a year in some cases. You're consistently tying your vision to CEO priorities. It's a huge difference. And I think that in order to get there, you need to work on your craft. You have to work on a process, on a playbook. And that's what my playbook is all about. It's about, you know, working on those skills so that you're ready to go to the enterprise, and then working on that from there.
I think there is so much power in mastering the craft and really understanding how do you evolve? How do you grow? I love seeing you talk about, you know, opposed to coming into a pitch and just pitching somebody, how do you actually do some research? And, you know, as Samantha McKenna talks about, show me, you know me. And you're like, oh, I saw your CEO was talking about this as a priority. So now you can thread what their leadership cares about to whoever your champion or your decision maker might be, is so powerful in just being a sales professional, opposed to, oh, I'm just a sales rep, I'm a salesperson. No, I'm a sales professional, which means you've got a craft and you work to master it. And I keep seeing great stuff from you, and it makes sense based upon the mindset that you have about it.
You're exactly right. And I think just touching on that a little bit more, Jordan, I think the biggest thing for me is that, you know, I came into an enterprise sales world to close big deals. Like I wanted to close transformational deals. And that's why I wanted to work with the big banks. And you hit the nail on the head. You want to be a professional. And I think it's about, you know, see me use this term sometimes, hear me use this term, point of view, building a point of view. How do you build a point of view with your customers? I have a 3 or 4 step model that I follow, where it's uncovering a CEO priority that you can align your value to somehow. For example, one CEO priority is, you know, driving more efficiency in this new hybrid environment that we're working on. One of the key challenges for the last 2 years is driving better employee experience and engagement. It's the top of a list of every CEO. I try to tie my value of our company to that. Number two, you want to make sure that you are sharing your value in a way that resonates with the customer, because a lot of customers care about, they don't care about your ROI. They don't care about, you know, all the fancy features that you have. They care about the problems and solving their problems. And I think it's best for you to articulate that. I never kick it off, hey, we're a great platform. We do this and X, Y, and Z. No. Hey, you know, we're working with a couple of your industry peers and we're finding they're facing X, Y, and Z. Does that resonate with you, given the fact that this is your CEO is talking about this? And I also love to share the fact, number three, is, you know, these big companies and these enterprise accounts, specifically the big banks, they care about what their competitors are doing. They're always on the market, these public companies. So if you can share some expertise, hey, I actually spoke to a CMO, one of your industry peers last week. They talked about X, Y, and Z. Hey, we're actually working with a couple of your industry peers that are leveraging our platform to solve similar problems. Are you open to learning more? So bringing that point of view, tying it to C-level executives, focusing on the problem versus your capabilities really helps you build credibility and lets you bring that point of view forward that really resonates with these executives.
Yeah, that is so good. And I just love alignment. You know, how can we align to what they care about, to what's important to them? Whereas I think so many of us in sales are so focused on just selling what we have. You know, I coach a lot of early sellers, a lot of channel partners that don't really consider themselves sellers. And it's so easy for them to be like, let me just tell you what I got to sell you. Opposed to taking, sometimes it's only 10 minutes of a little bit of research and maybe a few good questions to identify, well, what do they care about? So we can really build that point of view and that much more aligned perspective. I do have one question that I've wanted to ask you a little bit about, because I know you're, you know, about a year in, coming up on a year, maybe in a couple months here, to a new role. You have been remote the entire time. We've talked a little bit. You haven't had a chance to meet your peers in person, your colleagues, managers. And what advice would you have for maybe leaders? Because you've talked about feeling really welcomed in your new environment. What advice would you have for leaders to help new team members feel really welcomed as they ramp up in this fully remote setting?
So I think there's a couple of things for me personally, which I think has helped, and I think leaders would agree with this as well. I think the leaders want to make you feel welcome, which they have done at my current company. So for example, on a lot of our onboarding, yes, we had virtual sessions, but we had after-hour sessions as well, and some, you know, voluntary events that we could attend to really get to know our teammates a lot better that weren't work-related. And although it was virtual, it still made a big difference. Another thing that we have is we have this random one-on-one project where you'll be set aside with somebody random every week that you can chat with across the company. They could be in engineering, they could be in product, they could be in marketing. And it's a great way. I've had probably at least half a dozen to a dozen calls with random folks across the organization where I just sit down with them and we share thoughts and ideas. And it's a great way to get to know people better outside of work as well. And they're not on your sales team, they're on cross-functional teams. Another thing that I've noticed that's helped me as well is during the onboarding process, you know, we would leverage our platform, which would allow us to be, you know, more engaged with individuals. So there's a lot of different ways to be more engaged with people, to drive better. One other thing actually that I missed that I really like to do that I think can be positioned more as that. And I actually share this on LinkedIn as well, that, hey, if you joined a new company, how can you, even if you're remote, establish a brand early on internally at your organization? And what I recommend to a lot of the folks that have started new roles within the first 30 to 60 days, set aside time to meet with each of your cross-functional teammates, even if you're not aligned to them. For example, set aside a virtual coffee with your legal team, with your DLS team, with marketing, with finance, and just sit down and get to know them, because that'll build your brand. They're going to be like, how do they like to work? And world will spread that, hey, this person is actually meeting with a multitude of teams. He doesn't have to, right? He doesn't have to meet. But if you're proactive versus reactive, it'll help you build your brand internally.
Oh, there's so many good things of just building that internal network and getting a chance to meet other people. As I'm just sitting here reflecting, thinking about a lot of the new folks that I've connected with, they're almost all directly within my same role or function. And that's good. I think you have to build that internal network of folks that do your job, but you can learn so much more and see different perspectives and different points of view across an organization that just helps you meet people, find additional resources, find fun people, but also think about how does an entire organization operate versus just me, especially as I think about in my sales head of like, oh, I'm so important. Like I close the deals, I bring in the money. Nothing works if all these other folks on engineering and product and marketing and legal and, you know, even the facilities staff are so critical to helping the entire engine run. And I think building that perspective is a really awesome one. And I love the, weekly matching is really cool. You've talked some in the past about believing in what you sell and conviction. And I think there's a really fascinating kind of mental aspect to making sure that you're bought into what you're bringing to the table. And so as you've looked and evaluated different roles, how have you kind of identified when you go to a new organization that this is a product or a company that you can believe in or have conviction about?
Let me share it with a personal story and then I'll answer your question because I think it aligns to that. I was working at a company, a large company, and things were going really well. Obviously, I wanted to continue to move up. I wanted to increase my salary, just like everyone else does. There's a company that reached out to me. And I went through the interview process. And they offered me, wait for it, a 75% increase in my base in OTE. And the young seller that I was, I ran towards that. You know, I did a little research on the product. That seems pretty decent. Looks good, leadership team. You know what? I get to cover some of the big clients. I'm going to go there. And I went there. And everyone was welcoming. It went great. But then I slowly realized something. I looked into the product further. As I was, learning more about the product, as I was sitting down with customers, I found, I don't know if I'm completely sold on this product. I don't know if I believe in this product. I don't know if I have conviction in this product, in what I'm selling. And I realized I couldn't be successful. I didn't enjoy what I was doing. And I could fake it for a while. You know how you could talk through it for a while, but I slowly realized my customers could see through it. And most importantly, I saw through it. And from that point forward, I realized that the number one thing that you should be looking for. So I ultimately left that company because I didn't have that conviction. You can have the best leadership team in the world that genuinely cares about your well-being, cares about your career growth. That's great. That's something important. You can have the best culture and coworkers that care about each other and each other's success with no egos and you love working with them. That's great. But if you do not have conviction and belief in your selling, in what you're selling, if you don't believe that this is kind of the best product in the market that you believe will solve your business challenges, customers will see value in it. If you don't truly have conviction and belief in what you're selling, you won't enjoy what you're doing. You won't be successful and you won't be inspired to wake up every morning. And I realized that that's the number one thing that I look for. And I'm thankful that I found it.
Yeah, I remember my startup days and I still struggle with how do I get there as I love working with early stage startup companies that ideally have a product of, have some customers, but are still working on improving the product. But I think being able to know that you're going after a problem and a challenge that you can help solve and you're continually improving for startups, it is helpful. And then, you know, when we get to established companies, also seeing that, yeah, we're continuing to evolve. You know, I think I've been listening to Adam Grant's book talking about rethinking and think again, and how so many companies have struggled because they have just stayed very stagnant. And things move so fast in today's day and age. And so being able to get behind something that you believe in, you see the value in, you feel aligned to, I think it is so helpful for folks as they think about creating this sustainable performance. You can talk about, yeah, I've been able to, you know, grind and hustle at a company for a while, even though it didn't feel completely right. But if we really want to be able to sustain our performance, we've got to have that conviction. And I think that's it's such a powerful thing for us. I'd be interested as you think a little bit about, you mentioned, you know, leadership team and like that can be there, but if the product's not, what are some of those qualities that you really look for in leaders that help empower you to succeed?
One of the top things I look for is, you know, as sellers, if you do a great job, you know, you're going to hear things that you want to hear. Oh, great job. You hit your number. You see, oh, you get the Q4 award. You're doing great. The best leaders I've found is tell you things that where you need to get better, where you the real constructive feedback, because every seller needs to improve. I need to improve. It doesn't matter if I have 15 years of experience. There's areas I need to get a lot better in. And the thing I look for in leaders is tell me not what I want to hear, but what I need to do to get better. What are some things I need to do to get better? Can I be better at objection handling? Can I be better at building a mutual plan with a customer? The best leaders I found are the ones that can coach you and mentor you to be better and not just praise you for everything that you praise is great. I love it. But tell me where I need to get better. That's the number one thing I look for in leaders.
Oh, it's such a good one, especially as somebody that, you know, has stood out and done well in sales. I find leaders are very hands-off at that point, which is nice. I love the freedom. I love the autonomy, but being able to challenge you and say, hey, I listened to one of your calls or I saw one of your emails and I'm wondering, how did you feel about this? Can you reflect? Can you self-assess? Or I'm wondering if you think you could step up, another level here. So great to be challenged and to grow personally and professionally, because I believe that the better we get at sales, a lot of those skills translate to life. And so the better we get at being an active listener or being able to understand an objection or craft a message that's relevant to somebody else, I've got to do that with my family, with my fiance, with my friends, probably with your kids, I'd imagine. You can use some of those skills as transferable skills. So I love that, having a leader that really works to help you be your best and will challenge you to get there. It is really, really awesome. I'd love to understand a little bit about this concept of not drinking in sales. You got a story that I'm probably going to have you share from a little earlier in your career, because so many of my events that I go to when they were in person, it was like, oh, great. How much, you know, what's our bar tab? Or we got an open bar. We can drink until, you know, X amount of dollars. Great. Woo, party time. And for somebody that doesn't drink, I feel like it could be really challenging showing up in a sales environment, to the offsites, to the meetings, whatever it is. Talk to us a little bit about how you've shown up in this culture that's pretty driven towards these unhealthy activities. I'd love to hear, you know, a little bit of stories that you've got and maybe just some inspiration for others, because I remember talking to Tim Clark from Uncrushed, talking about starting a sober employee resource group at Salesforce called Soberforce, or he didn't start it. He joined some other folks to champion it with them. But that was the first time I've heard of anything like that. And so help us understand, for the folks that either drink but want to show up better, for folks that don't drink, or maybe people that don't drink but don't really like to tell anybody because they're in sales, how do you show up and how do you keep that conviction for your own personal self? And how do you show up and still perform and be amazing in sales?
Right. So basically, you know, when I started my career in sales, professional sales back in 2006, you know, obviously I didn't drink at the time. I still don't. But, you know, I came into a culture where drinking was the norm. You know, I know a lot of people that are on the outside looking in. They picture sales reps hanging out at the bar, you know, checking down a couple of cold ones and closing the deal. And it was there was a lot of that, you know, back in the day. And there still is. I think that, you know, for example, my first holiday dinner at the company I started my career with, I was sitting down. We were at a restaurant. Everybody was getting their drinks. And, you know, I ordered a Coke. And the person next to me goes, "You're a rookie. Come on." You know, and I've heard other people tell me that, listen, you know, questioning me if I could be successful in sales if I didn't drink. But I'm a person that stays true to my values. You know, I'm not going to replace my values just to kind of fit in, right? And I feel that's important. That's important to me as who I am and who I am as a person of faith. And by the way, there's several reasons that people don't drink. For example, I've spoken to a multitude of folks over the last few weeks that have been sober for many years and that don't drink for other reasons as well, maybe faith as well. And you know, what I tell people is that sales isn't about drinking. Yes, people drink. You know, my colleagues drink and, you know, there's going to be events like that. But sales is about building a connection with someone. Sales is about uncovering business problems and helping solve them. And you don't need to chug down a couple of cold ones to do that, right? And and by the way, some of the most open conversations that I've had with individuals, even customers, is about the fact that I brought up that I didn't drink and they were curious to learn why. And I shared why. And we had an open conversation. Then they opened up with things that they probably wouldn't have opened up if I didn't bring that up. And it built a better connection. Closed a couple of deals because of that as well. And I think it's important because as I started posting on LinkedIn about 6 months ago, I do touch on this drinking aspect quite a bit because I think people need to hear about it. Because some people who are looking to break into sales have I've had dozens of people that have reached out to me that have said, "Hey, I'm starting a new tech sales role. How do I get around the fact that I'm going to a place where there's a drinking culture? How do I get adjusted to it?" Or, you know, "Hey, I've been sober for this many years. How do you get around this?" And I've told them that it's okay to share why you don't drink, because a lot of companies, more and more over the last few years, have been shifting to an environment where they have to drive inclusion and diversity. And there'll be not every single event has to be centered around alcohol. So for me, the important thing is stay true to who you are. Don't disregard your values just to fit in, because some people think that you need to be successful. In order to be successful in sales, you need to drink. I've been in the game for 15 years. I think I did pretty good without drinking.
And it's so refreshing to hear, because I think there's this big challenge with this bro culture and all these things in sales. And I think part of the drinking is in that vein of, oh, we've got to go drink and party in order to, whether it's de-stress or whether it's to connect with a prospect. And connection is much more about being true to yourself and being authentic and saying, here's who I am and I'm okay with it. Versus so many people that I think have to wear a different mask than who they are on the inside to who they project outside when they try and engage with other people to just fit in. And so, man, so powerful. And for the folks that don't drink or maybe trying to go towards sobriety or whatever it may be, reach out. There's communities. There are other people out there like you that have been incredibly successful in sales, are continuing to be successful, and can help build some other camaraderie or awareness around it, you know? And so I think it's a really powerful story and it's helpful because, as you've heard me talk about, like, alcohol's not even good for our body. I wake up hungover the next day and I can't perform at my best. And I still drink. I'd like to drink less. I've cut back some, but man, being able to show up clear-headed, I feel like allows you to connect with people in a lot better, more productive way than maybe, you know, I have sometimes when I'm just had a few too many and I'm still trying to talk to a prospect.
Yeah, and I'm glad you bring that up, Jordan. I'm not here to say that I'm better than anyone else. I'm not. Like, trust me, I got a lot of flaws in my life where if I were to open up, you'd be like, really? So I'm not saying that I'm not against drinking. Like, people drink, that's fine. I'm in sales. If I didn't like drinking, I wouldn't be successful. Or people that didn't drink, I wouldn't be successful. So for me, it's, I'm not better than you. You're like, I'm not trying to say that. It's just that this is something that I say true to, and it's resonating. The message is resonating with people that want to be successful in sales, but also want to kind of fulfill their, you know, values as well.
Yeah. It's super powerful. I just love that you're a champion for that message. And that's something that's natural and comes true to you. It's not like it's something that you have to force out there, because we're going through a big reckoning around how do we be our best selves? How do we show up at our best day in and day out? And so I really appreciate you sharing that. So I'd love to wrap up with just two or three rapid fire questions with you. You're all right? Down to play?
I'm not that good at these, but sure.
That's all right. We'll make it easy. And luckily, school taught us that, like, oh, there's only one right answer. There's no right or wrong answer here. Do you love winning or dislike losing more?
I love winning more.
Let's go. I love it. Do you believe that you're an introvert or an extrovert?
I would say I'm in the middle, maybe an introvert.
I think I'm an ambivert. I believe that's a technical term. Okay. So I'm okay with ambivert. I'm okay with that one. Then the last one I have for you, what does success mean to you today?
Success to me is putting my family first before sales. And I have a thing that I kind of posted a few days ago where I said, my side hustle is my family. That's what my side hustle is. And I have nothing against side hustles. I actually appreciate and full out respect people that are able to manage a full-time job, their family, and a side hustle. But for me, I got three little girls, all nine or under, and they are my priority.
I'm glad you called out that post. I was going to have folks check that one out, as I thought that was really beautiful, because so many of us lose the ability to spend time with our families because we work, and yet we work to provide for our family. And there's this big friction that I see so many people struggling with that has had some benefits through the pandemic of, hey, great, now I feel comfortable dropping my kids off at school in a work day, when in the past I just couldn't do that. But there's also this tension of, well, I'm on my computer and I'm in work, and like, how do I close my door, lock the kids out, or whatever it is to create that space? And so I think there's a lot of tension there, but showing up for your family is so, so, so critical and important. And I just think that's an awesome note for us to end on. So Salman, thank you so much. Where should folks find you? We'll link off, but I think I know where we're going to point folks. Where would you like folks to find you and connect with you?
Just follow me on LinkedIn, Salman Mohideen. I'm right there. And I appreciate you following me.
This is good. Well, I know folks are going to get a ton of value from following you. The advice that you're posting is not only really practical for sellers, but also for us as humans, as you think about family, as you think about understanding different perspectives. So Salman Mohideen, thank you, thank you, thank you. And until next time, let's go make today great. It's thanks to help from listeners like you, this podcast can continue to grow and help others. If you found anything helpful in today's episode, please take a second, share with a friend, and leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast today. Thanks.